This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
History became legend. Legend became myth.
Even the smallest person can change the course of the future.
Many that live deserve death, and some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them, Frodo? Do not be too eager to deal out death and judgment. Even the very wise cannot see all ends.
I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. There are other forces at work in this world, Frodo, besides the will of evil. Bilbo was meant to find the ring, in which case you also were meant to have it. And that is an encouraging thought.
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. Welcome to Aeon Byte. My name is Miguel Connor and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis, that madman across the waters of creation. And great to see everybody here on this Freya Day. For those of you here in the USA, I hope you've started celebrating your holiday weekend, your Memorial Day. And you can recharge your batteries and optimize your gnosis in this age of Hermes, Philip K. Dick world, and Gnostic times. And the topic today, well, I'm always very excited about this. We will be discussing the Lord of the Rings, an esoteric decode. If you really want true archons, go watch Rings of Power, because that is truly an archonic show. But I'll probably hate watch the second season because it really is that bad. It's like people who really hate Tolkien. But nobody here hates Tolkien. All three of us love Tolkien. And that includes our guest, David Block. David, thank you very much for coming back and sharing this gnosis with us.
Thank you, Miguel. It's a pleasure to be here, as always, and with the audience and Graham. And I hope people will like the decode of Lord of the Rings.
I'm sure we will.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Graham, and how are you doing?
Doing very well. Looking forward to hearing, you know, all about Tolkien and his take on technology and all that underlying stuff that's esoteric.
Awesome. Awesome. And we do have a little guest here. Found this little monster in the woods, so now he's part of the team. All right, you go play, little one. Okay. And yes, I see already the crowd joining in again for later on. If you have any questions, please super chat them, and we will get to them. Graham will take care of the chat room so it doesn't turn into Chatico. Before we get started, of course, I'd like to say that it is truly a pleasure that David will be joining us at Astronosis this August 9th and 10th. And David, you will be discussing one of the coolest goddesses, right?
Yeah, Hecate. We have done some invocation of the lady and spoke to her, and she had come into my life, and I will share the experience. with you all. So it will be Gnosis from the lady herself.
Awesome. Great to hear that. And yes, this will, we have some great guests, but we also, it will be experiential. We will have a social with some prayers and party. We will have two workshops on Sophianic Gnosticism for you to enrich your soul and alter your state of mind. And it will be amazing. And in fact, here I have the, let me do the page real quick. As you can see, 9th and 10th at the Theosophical Society. And it's an amazing place. The energy is just incredible. It will be 2 days with several guest speakers. Again, workshops. There will be guests selling wares and books and stuff like that. We'll have a social, perhaps two, which are truly a blast and where real gnosis is shared. Here are some of our guests. We've got Richard Smoley, who will lead with Sophia. Ola Wolny will be visiting from Norway. Of course, Chris Knowles will be hitting it out of the house. Just booked Maja Daou. She will be discussing Sophia, and she will also be giving a workshop. Also a workshop, we got Dan Morse and Diane Kelly. They have spent so much research on Sophia, both from a historical and a spiritual level. Mitch Horowitz is going to kill it too, as he's going to be talking about altered states of mind. James True and Steven Snyder return. And you know, their presentations are unique and exclusive and amazing. My friend Rhyme should be joining us from Japan, and she's going to bring so much art. And there's Mr. David Block. And we've got Dr. Will Peter, who will be discussing a lot about AI and alternative realities and really cutting edge stuff. And last and certainly least, I will, of course, do some talking. I don't know why it says Miguel Connor in. I've got to fix that. So hope to see everybody there at the Astrognosis. And let me know if you have any questions. We are accepting sponsorships. So it's so much going on, and it's truly a game-changing event. So, well, now let's get on to Tolkien. Anything you want to say, David, or shall we just jump into the slides?
Yeah, yes. Let us jump into it.
Let's go. Saturn is not patient. Cronus, Cronus is limiting our time as we speak. All right, here we go.
Yeah, so this is the third part of a three-part series. You talked in part one about the apocalyptic time clock matrix, End Times and Revelations. And in part two, the tower, necromancy, and the search for eternity. And this is part three, the esoteric decode of Lord of the Rings. And of course, it's about Tolkien's famous books. I hope I can make sense why it should be the third part in this series, but it is. So I will do my best to connect it. And to decode Lord of the Rings is a very risky project because you can have many different takes on it. And of course, I will focus on the esoteric stuff in the books, not the characters. I will not talk about Gandalf for half an hour and stuff like that, who he was, but I will mention him. But for the most part, I mention the characters when it benefits in the esoteric decode I'm doing. And yeah, the books is Lord of the Rings, and there are three of them, but yeah, Tolkien written a lot of books. And I will go back to Silmarillion as well, and a little bit from The Hobbit. So this presentation is 11 chapter long. The first one is Tolkien, the second one, the tape, Middle Earth and the Ages, Sauron, characters, the road, the ring, the tower, the boatman, the fourth age, and the last chapter 11 is today. So let's talk about Tolkien a little bit. Yeah, Tolkien was a professor in language, and that in of itself is interesting for this presentation. I'll explain it in the end of the presentation. But he was a professor from England in language. And it was very interesting in myth and history and stuff like that. And in The Lord of the Rings, they put together a lot of different myth from different regions of the world and combine them into a lore or a narrative. So he's very knowledgeable about religion, myth, esoteric stuff, I would argue, and I will make my best to make that clear. Yeah, he was born 3rd of January 1892, and he died 2nd September 1973. He fought in World War One, and of course, it made a huge impact on him. Now, this is a thing people always come back to, the fact that he was a Catholic. But to be a Catholic doesn't mean that much. Catholicism looked different in Brazil than in England and so on. You have different kinds of Catholics. And Catholic is a very broad religion. You have different orders. For example, the Jesuits. And the Jesuits is for sure an esoteric order in the Catholic faith or in the Vatican. And I believe Tolkien knew a lot about this. And I believe that Tolkien didn't like what he saw, what has taken place in the Catholic faith. Maybe he was a Catholic, but I think it was a critical one. So in this presentation, I will use the three books of the Lord in the series of Lord of the Rings. The Hobbit will be a little bit in there, I think, and then Silmarillion. Silmarillion is very important because it explains what happens in the Lord of the Rings. So if you haven't read the Silmarillion, you still understand what's going on, but you have a much broader understanding of it. So it's a very important book, and I love the Silmarillion. When I read it, I read it more than one time. Some people have a hard time with it because a lot of names, age, religion, and gods and stuff like that. But for me, it really it's very important to have a more full understanding of the Lord of the Ring and what's going on in those books. So a very interesting thing happened, and this was on InfoWars. I don't remember the age, the year it was, but Alex Jones invited a member from the Tolkien Society to discuss a tape. And this tape had disappeared, and it appeared, and the tape ended up within the Tolkien Society, group. And these recordings was recorded 1958, and it was Tolkien talked on the tape. Now the quality was very bad, so they tried to polish the tape and enhance the quality of it. So that we have very little from the tape. I don't know what happens to the tape. They would send it to BBC to help them to and then I think it disappeared. Maybe not the best choice, but they still had this interview on InfoWars, and I really liked that part of InfoWars. And I downloaded it because Alex Jones' channel InfoWars was taken out from YouTube. They canceled it, so the clip can't be found anywhere. But I download everything I like and put it on a hard drive. It's like 5 terabyte of information in there. A lot of things have disappeared. This clip ended up in my hard drive. So I have uploaded it on my channel, YouTube channel, if you want to listen to it in full. What we can say about the tape is that Tolkien is talking more straightforward than he ever have done. a lot of, there are some interviews with him with in BBC interviewers or whatever, and he's very dry on them. He don't want to talk about his work and so on. And I understand him, because you can't tell people what it is about. You have to lure them in and then allow people to figure it out on their own. They have to do the work. Otherwise, it can't be explained in a short interview, like 5 to 10 minutes. It's ridiculous. Therefore, Tolkien was very dry and boring. But on the interviews, I think it's very funny, because he knows that he can't explain it for this interviewer or this journalist anyway. So he's just, he don't try. But in this tape, he's talking for excluded society of people, or a group of people. They called it the Hobbit's Dinner, and it was for like fans of his work. And this was 1958. And some recorded this speak of Tolkien. A lot of the speak haven't been heard because the tape disappeared, but some was they played up some of it on Alex Jones' channel InfoWar during this interview with a man named John. And I hope it is correct now, because it was a person on my YouTube channel who mentioned his real name. So I hope it is John. Very nice man, and he did a great work, I think, on this interview. Well, this is some stuff Alex Jones and John is talking about. So it's not only Tolkien who is talking here. I will make a difference when I talk. When it's Tolkien, I will try to tell. I will always tell you it is Tolkien who say this. And this is speculation between Alex and John, and it also comes from the letters of Tolkien. So they are talking about that Tolkien didn't write in allegory. The ring is a symbol for power. The ring as a symbol for technology. They are talking about technology and machines and future technology, that Tolkien was a visionary and he could see that technology will just enhance and take over more and more from the natural into the unnatural and infiltrate human life or take over our life. Now, Tolkien is talking about corruption and confusion. Tolkien is talking about they play a multidimensional chess game. The public barely plays checkers. This power are many-headed, a hydra. Power to change the natural into an artificial construct. This is Tolkien who are talking about stuff like that. I don't quote him, but that is what he is alluding to. Alex and John is talking about machines and robots in combination to what Tolkien is talking about, or their conclusion, what Tolkien is talking about. Alex is mentioned Terminator and Skynet. They're talking about computer chips, magicians pulls the strings in the background, a hidden elite, technology and an elite class of privileged men. Tolkien is talking about they use technology to mislead nations. He calls his audience hobbits, and this is important. He calls his audience hobbits. This is a hobbit's dinner. The magician distanced themselves from nature. Destruction of the natural in favor of the unnatural. Tolkien says, refuse to worship any of the Hydra's head, the Babel builders. What is their next move? And he is talking about the future. And this is very important for this three-part series. He's talking about the Babel builders. He's talking about the Tower of Babylon. And of course, this is a is my archetype, the Tower, he's talking about here. Tolkien. And this is a quote from the tape. "I do not see any Sauron, but I do see many descendants of Saruman. We do not have any magical weapons on our own, but let us survive all the wizards." So that's very powerful. And I think if you understand what they're talking about there, you will also understand Lord of the Rings, because they really have the main theme in those quotes. And I will go back to it because it's very important for my STFD code. And I think you all know, if you have listened to my first two parts, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. So let's talk a little bit about Middle-earth now.
Let's do it.
Yeah. And Middle-earth is named Middle-earth for a reason, of course. Tolkien didn't do anything of like a coincidence. It was very, very into details and perfectionists. So what is Middle-earth? Well, the real name of Middle-earth is Sumeria. That's the region called Middle-earth. And in the Sumerian region, you have city-states called Uruk and Ur, for example. And for everyone who has read the Tolkien, they know that these names come up, or at least Uruk-hai, like Uruk, Uruk-hai. The Uruk-hai from Sumeria, or that region of our reality, our planet. So you have a reference to Sumeria in Uruk-hai, and also in the Tower, of course. Babylon's Tower was built in Babylon. Babylon was part of Sumeria, city-state in Sumeria. So a lot of things is a reference to Sumeria, and the name Middle-earth is a reference to Sumeria. Middle-earth is Sumeria. Tolkien also talk about ages, and we have four ages or three ages in the Lord of the Ring, and when the Lord of the Rings ends, a fourth age starts, the age of man. So I think he got this from the Kali Yugas, the Hindu Yuga circle. And in the Lord of the Ring, and you can make this a little bit different, like, so, right? So it's not like,
right.
But for the most part, people think the first age is 590 years.
Right.
But you can have another opinion if you want to. The second age is 3,441 years. The third age is 3,021 years. And the fourth age, we don't know. The fourth age starts when the third age is finished, ends. But you can see he used this yuga idea from the Hinduic religion and Vedas. But it's also in other religions, and the idea of destruction and rebirth is a recurring theme in Indian the nature-based religions and so on.
Right.
Sauron, who is he? And this is a very tricky question. And I will give you two different ideas. But if you're going back to the history of Sauron, to know about him a little bit, what Tolkien was writing out clear in Silmarillion, Sauron was a servant of Morgoth. So Morgoth is the great devil here. So it's not Sauron who is the devil or the main evil god, but Sauron is a servant of Morgoth. And Sauron was active in Aman, and Aman is the god's country. So it's very old. The first age ends with the defeat of Morgoth. So now Sauron is the main guy, right? Because Sauron is the Sauron of Morgoth, and he has to take on the war against the good after the defeat of Morgoth. So now Sauron is the main villain in the saga, not Morgoth, who are defeated. In the Second Age, we have a very interesting story about Numenor. And this is how we know that Tolkien was into very deep esoteric stuff. So I'm not deep, but you know, he's talking about Atlantis here, of course, and then the destruction of Atlantis.
Right.
And in this, in Silmarillion, it is called Numenor. And Sauron infiltrates Numenor. And this is also what I'm talking about in my presentations a little bit, that it was two different factions, one who are based on technology and esoteric stuff, and one esoteric faction or who use method, an esoteric method, and use their own body as their temple. They don't add any technology to it. Now, I'm not saying that technology is bad, right? We use technology now, but when you combine technology with esoteric method and with your body, you should be very careful, I think. So it's not.
Do you hear that, transhumanist? Do you hear that, transhumanist?
Yeah, this is a lot about them. The Second Age ends with the defeat of Sauron by the Last Alliance. Sauron loses his physical body, and this is the reason why he is this eye now, the eye in the tower. So he cannot take physical form any longer, and this is very interesting. If you compare it to Sumerian mythology, where the Anunnaki lost their ability to take physical form in our reality, they are spirits, right, Anunnaki? I'm not into the alien paradigm crowd at all. The Anunnaki is spirits that can take physical form. It seems I can't prove that because I haven't invoke any Anunnaki in front of me. But everyone can learn how to communicate with Anunnaki. I haven't done so, but they exist, and I don't care what people say. It's not my problem if people don't understand that these forces exist. I communicate with them anyway.
Right.
Sauron becomes the eye, the tower. He also loses a lot of his power. Manipulation becomes the game because he ain't this powerful anymore. Now we have to change his game plan a little bit, to infiltrate and to use wit and to be outsmart his enemies. And this is why the ring comes about, because he put in his own self into the ring and corrupts the other 19 he had given away to the race of men, dwarves, and elves. So they become corrupted through his ring of control. And of course, this is kind of a broadcast device, right?
Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. Everyone got their own television here and watch news and shit. But this is a ring, of course. So who is Sauron? And this is a very tricky question, as I said before, because for many writers, they don't pick one god or one demon. They combine different elements of them. It's very hard to say that Tolkien choose one. I think it's a combination of two. So first off, and the easiest answer is, of course, that Sauron is Saturn. Sauron is the Lord of the Rings. Saturn is the Lord of the Rings. Saturn has an eye. Saturn is the Demiurge. Now, this is, of course, perfect for me because I pinpointed Ninurta Saturn as and Jehovah's retarded demiurgic son, right? So then it's perfect. But it is a little bit trickier than this because Tolkien is also a Catholic. Now, did he know that Jehovah is Enlil and that Enlil's son is Ninurta Saturn? Maybe he doesn't. So therefore, he believes that Saturn, Ninurta, is evil. And this is a very sad thing with the Christians, of course. I don't think they know what they are worshiping, of course, with their faith. And that's the purpose. But you can also as easily say that Sauron is Samael. And now people might say, but Samael is a left-hand path. I am into the left-hand path.
Yeah. What are you doing, David?
I have exposed myself here, right? So, of course, now the Christian will say, yeah, he's Samael. And, of course, I will say, yeah, he's such a... You know how it is. But I will rather argue that he's a combination of them because you can make a case for both and. And from a left-hand path perspective, I don't view Samael as an evil demon. But Samael is a harsh demon to... You have to work with him and overcome him. Otherwise, you can fall prey. And the opposite may occur, that you become a fallen one, in a fallen state. You don't want that. If you go into this left-hand path, you have to do it for the right reason, right focus, with wisdom and so on. But Samael can be a harsh teacher. So it's not wrong. And I think Tolkien, if he's a Catholic, from his perspective, this is evil, of course. This is dark. And that's how he perceives the Cliffotic tree as well. I perceive the Cliffotic tree as something you have to work yourself through, your own darkness, your own shadow, and transform. However, Samael is the poison of God. He rules over one of the Cliffords in the dark tree. He rules over Mercury, but before it was Mars. So this is an important thing because the Sauron seems to be quite warlike, right? So Mars is a perfect take for him. Saturn and Mars, of course, in combination, these forces. Matter. Technology, war, strife, rules, regulation, hierarchy, dictatorship, and so on. And the poison of God is a perfect reference to what happened when you turn the ring, or if you take it on, rather, right? You get poisoned. And this is exactly what happened when you drink the poison of Samael. If you invoke Samael, it can come at you and show you a cup. And if you drink from it, the unholy grail, your reality becomes distorted. It's like you have taken a lot of different drugs and you become quite lost for a moment.
Yeah.
And you can see this in Space Odyssey 2001 in the end when he's sitting at the table and he drops off the glass on the floor and it shakes and he's distorted, sees himself and so on. This is not an evil act from Samael's point of view. It is to show you that you live in an illusion and you can change and you can transform it. It's very malleable. It is not rigged, it's not fixed. But that experience in and of itself can be very harsh. And it's hard ordeals you have to go through to see the truth. Do you want the truth or not? And if you want it, you have to go through darkness and scary stuff. Nothing is gained for free.
Nothing.
And Frodo
no knows pain, all... no gain, as they say.
Exactly. And Frodo knows all about this, right? Yeah. But it is Samuel who frees Frodo, because it's because his defeat that allows Frodo to leave Middle-earth to the gods' country, right? So he overcomes this strife and transforms, in a way. Well, then we have Gandalf, and Gandalf is a very big character in Silmarillion, where Tolkien explains who they are and so on. And Gandalf is a Maia, and a Maia is a half god, you can say, working for one of the gods. And the gods is called Valar in Tolkien's lore. So the Maia serves the Valar, and Gandalf is one of them. So he's a half god, you can say. Gandalf was born in Aman, the god's country, as a Maia. Manwë the Valar sent him to Middle-earth to wage war against Sauron. In Middle-earth, he was one of the Istari, magicians fighting Sauron. So they were there to try to defeat Sauron. And that's the order with Saruman as the leader for this Istari, this magician's order. And this is also the reason why you have to question how Catholic Tolkien was, because here you have magicians, heroes that are into magic, you have fantasy, and a lot of Christian hates Tolkien and Lord of the Rings because of that. Uh-huh. So you have to ask yourself, how much of a Catholic was Tolkien? I had a friend who met Tolkien, a wonderful lady, and she said, yeah, he was a gentleman. He took care of us and taking care of me, and had a wonderful time. Yeah, very nice lady. She's quite old now. She lived here on Gotland for a while and came to my lectures. So she saw my lecture on Tolkien here on this island of mine. Yeah, it was very, very cool.
Yeah, it is.
So he seems to be a very nice man, but how much of a Catholic he was, I question that. And what kind of a Catholic was he? I can't prove it. And then you have Saruman, of course, and in the Lord of the Ring, he's the one who gets corrupted by Sauron. And he was the leader of the Istari, a wizard sent by the Valar to Middle-earth and used technology to create the Uruk-hai by combining genes and so on. And this is also a reference to Sumer and the Anunnaki and the creation myth of man, that we were created from the Anunnaki. So here is also a reference. So a lot of things go back to Sumeria, verse turns and technology and stuff like that. And this is interesting. I really like Tolkien in that he's saying that the strongest of them was corrupted. And it is something to it that, for example, our politicians and so on, the ones who are into power and highest up can fall very easily.
Yeah, and Jung did say the bigger the person, the bigger the shadow. If you don't integrate it will consume you.
Exactly.
No excuses.
So true. And that is very true. And that's true also in the left-hand path and the Cliff 43. Mm-hmm. You have to be careful and do it for all the right reasons. Then we have Galadriel, another character is very important, of course. And I think Galadriel is very interesting. The mightiest and fierce of the elves in Middle-earth. And I would say she's based on different characters here, gods. Or I think Tolkien combines Sophia with Lilith and Hecate. Now we come back to Hecate. And I saw Jason Rescue and talk my heck out as well. Everyone's talking about the lady these days. But Galadriel was tempted by the ring and lost that temptation. She made some stupid choices in the first age, if I remember correctly. And therefore, she had to linger on in Middle Earth to learn her lesson. So there's a dark side to Galadriel as well. And I make the claim that I think Lilith is a dark, a fallen Sophia. Maybe even the same goddess. Maybe the Christian Gnostic thought that Lilith is too harsh and too dark. Let's name her Sophia instead and make her a little bit brighter. That is just a thought, theory.
I think there's something to it because, yeah, they had the Valentinians had Achamoth and sometimes called her Ekmoth, the death wisdom. She was the dark side of the higher Sophia. So I wouldn't be surprised. And they had, of course, Prunikos, the lewd one. She was sort of the temptress side of Sophia. So there was something, yeah. I think there was this goddess that had, as you say, a shadow side and a light side.
Yeah, thank you, Miguel. And I can't prove that, but there you have it. And I also think there is a Hecate in Galadriel as well, because Hecate is a healer and a motherly goddess. And Hecate, I can speak of personal gnosis because I have invoked her a couple of times. And every time I've done so, she has always healed me, healed my brain, healed my heart, made some profound things for me. I haven't come in clear communication with her, but I will, I think. And when we did the ritual in my temple, she started dance around us in Celtic patterns. Wow. And Tolkien is a lot about Celtic pattern and energies and Mother Earth kind of grids going on. And I feel Galadriel is an archetype of all of that in some way. That's my take. But Hecate is a wonderful goddess. And the homeopathy, my friend said, they hold Hecate in high esteem as a healer. And then we have lesser men, Boromir, a little drop off here, but still in the books, he's a brave warrior, right? The valiant warrior of Gondor, the old son of Denethor II. But Boromir falls prey to the ring and become corrupt by it. And this is a wonderful way for Tolkien to say that men are easy led astray, even the strong among us. So you should be very careful when you delve into esoteric stuff. Everyone can be corrupt, at least the humans, right? And even the gods, because Gandalf didn't want to carry the ring on his own. That's the reason why Frodo had to carry it. And then there's a logic to it, because a corrupt Gandalf would be much more powerful than a corrupt Frodo, right? Frodo can withstand it as good as Gandalf, and Gandalf didn't want to risk it. But Boromir becomes corrupt, and he dies in the Lord of the Rings. But he has a nice father as well, and then Thor II, the king of Gondor, or rather steward of Gondor, because the king's line had died off. And of course, Aragorn is going to claim the throne as the rightful heir later on in the story. But for now, Denethor II is the steward of Gondor, and he has two sons, Boromir and Faramir. And the reason why I talk about Denethor in this presentation is, of course, it's not so much to do with esoteric stuff, but you can see how Tolkien is talking about corrupt men, right? Corrupt men in high places. And this, we can relate this to our age for sure. Our politicians, the people who rules us, they're all corrupt. rotten, and they have lost their way. And humanity doesn't care, at least for now. I don't know what it will take, but for now they are settled by being ruled by corrupted evil men. I don't know why. That's how it is. Propaganda, manipulation, yeah, of course, yeah, television and so on. So.
Yeah.
But I think the Nethor II is a great example of that. Well, in the Lord of the Rings, you have the elves as well. And the elves are very interesting. The elves are much older than the human race. They existed in the God's land, Aman. So they have existed very long time. And they are very powerful in Tolkien's saga, in Tolkien's myth. And this is interesting because it seems that we, or let's say it like this, the Watchers have stated that before us, there were a more powerful human race. And this race become corrupted. And the reason why they become corrupted was because they gain power too fast. You can't gain power without wisdom. If you only gain power and no wisdom, you will be corrupt. You will misuse it. You will go astray. And this cousin of ours have gone astray. I don't know who they are, but we can speculate. They can be the Nordics, for example. And they can still be around. They can be the one who were involved in Atlantis. I don't know that. That's speculation. But I'm pretty sure, because the Watcher doesn't lie. I never, like, they are very straightforward. And they've said we have had a cousin who was much more powerful than we were. And then you have the hobbits, of course. And the hobbits are the little people. They want to have a peaceful life. They don't have the drive to know more about the world around them. Ignorant is bliss. And remember, Tolkien was talking about in the dinner, hobbits dinner party, that he refer his audience as hobbits. The hobbits are us. It's the main man. We just want to have a good time, live in peace, don't want to know about anything. They want to have parties and eat good food and be left alone. But they don't know anything, what's going on around them either. So they can fall prey very easily, especially if it is a corrupting power outside of them. And this corrupting power will come knocking on their door. And that's a very powerful statement from Tolkien. The end of the books is a little bit different from the movies, and I will discuss that. But the hobbits is like the main man. It's like Svensson in Sweden. Svensson is a normal Swede, right? They are like very nice, gullible, and very easy to mislead. But right, they are nice.
Like Joe Sixpack here in the United States.
Exactly. That's the Joe Sixpacks. But there's also a very good point Tolkien makes here. Because if you awaken to the threat and rise up to the challenge, they can do a lot of things. And if the mainstream man would wake up to reality, the game would be up. But they don't. The control game would be up. And then we have Gollum, of course. And Gollum was a hobbit, and the ring corrupted him. And it prolonged his life. And, of course, Gollum loses his ring to Bilbo. And Bilbo is a hobbit who left Shire to go into adventure. And the other hobbits thought Bilbo was crazy, of course, why leave our village and go to explore something outside of Shire, mm-hmm. when you can live a peaceful life. So Bilbo was the first, not the first hobbit, but he's the only one mentioned, the only hobbit that mentioned that they mentioned, Tolkien mentioned to leave. And he finds the ring and take it from Gollum. Everyone knows this. I don't have to talk about more than that. But we can clearly see how the ring corrupts. We have a very important tree in Gondor. The White Tree of Gondor. There were more than one tree, but the best known was the one in Gondor. And in the Lord of the Rings, tree had like withered and died. So their former glory was long gone. And this tree is, of course, a symbol for, I think, the tree of life. Why I draw the conclusion, I will come back to it. But for now, the tree of life is the Kabbalistic tree. You can claim that it is the right-hand path tree. By the Clifford is the dark tree. So this is the tree of life. Sounds great, right? The tree of Clifford, the death and darkness, sounds horrible, of course. Yeah. But it's not that easy. We need both of these trees for our reality to be manifest. For us to experience, to have this experience, the both tree has to exist. But the darkness we want to hide. And the light and the life and light and love and stuff like that is good, right? So we want to avoid the darkness and go into the light. But it is also a reference maybe to Yggdrasil, of course. So it's not, it doesn't have to be one thing here. And the reason why I mentioned Yggdrasil is also that I know Tolkien was into the mythology of the Vikings, the Asa, and the Celtics, and so on. And tree was a very important symbol. You have the Saxon tree as well. The Romans destroyed it. So a lot of symbology with trees. So it's not only the tree of life. You can see this in the mythology of Tolkien, that the tree becomes a very important symbol. But I will come back to why I mentioned the tree of life and why I think it's in Tolkien's mind as well. So I will come back to it, but for now we will leave it. So now you have this great journey of the hobbits, because Bilbo get the ring from Gollum, and Frodo gets the ring from Bilbo because Gandalf wanted destroyed, and they chose Frodo to do the journey with the ring to Mordor to destroy it. So the journey starts in Shire. And as I said, Shire is the home of the hobbits, a protected place from the outside. It is isolated from the darkness surrounding it, so it's like a safe haven. If you compare it with a lot of the other places in Middle Earth. So these hobbits are very, they are not very knowledgeable about the world around them. Of course, this is very important. This is a beautiful allegory for what it is. But if you change it from knowledge, the human race doesn't care about knowledge, and life is easy without knowledge, because what you don't know, you don't have to do anything about. And sometimes you don't want to know, because they don't want to know. Because if they know, they might have to do something about it. But sometimes to be in the dark can be very hard, and the truth can come back at you and hurt you anyway. Your lack of knowledge or understanding doesn't save you. Only make you feel secure. on the journey towards Mordor, they pass Moria. Moria is the name given to the mountainous region in the book of Genesis. It is the place where King Solomon built his temple. And this Moria in Lord of the Rings is, of course, the caves the dwarves worked in. And this is very important because now we know what Tolkien is talking about a little bit when we compare to our world. They are on the way to Mordor and have to pass Moria. That is to say, they are going towards the Middle East and towards Sumeria and Babylon. And Mordor is probably a reference to Sumer or Babylon. Tolkien have more reference to the region, like Uruk or Ur or Uruk-hai. And the tower, of course, the famous Tower of Babylon. So you can see that Tolkien used reference to our reality because he wants us to understand that this tale, this saga, is about much more than just a fairy tale. He tries to tell you something. And you can understand the deeper stuff if you start to study history, myth, and so on, religion, esoteric stuff. Now, let's talk about the ring. In the saga, Lord of the Rings, it says that Sauron made 3 rings for the elves and 7 rings for the dwarves. And 9 rings for the men. Makes it total into 19. And 19 is a sun number. And you can see the sun number in the tarot, for example, where card number 19 in the Major Arcana is the sun. So 19 rings is a sun number. And the sun is, of course, a positive, powerful force. We have Bilbo. And Bilbo in the Lord of the Rings birthday is 111. And 111 is another sun number. So you have the sun finding the one ring and all the other rings except the one becomes the sun. And this is his birthday in Lord of the Rings. He becomes 111 before he leaves Shire for Elrond. Yeah, but we have one more ring to go. And it becomes 19 plus 1 equals 20. And 20 is a Saturn number. And that is Sauron's ring, another reference to Saturn and to Sauron, Lord of the Rings, right? And Saturn is the Lord of the Ring, because Saturn has rings around it. So with the one ring, it becomes 20, Saturn. And also it becomes the card Judgment in the Major Arcana, the tarot cards. So there's a judgment coming here, and we all know the judgment, of course. And then you have the famous verse, one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. And yeah, it's a binding into matter. Saturn is all about matter, hierarchy, strictures, to hold back, to restrain. And And this is exactly what Sauron tries to do with the ring. But the ring is much more than that, and I have alluded to it. It is also a reference to the Clifotic tree, to the dark tree. We talked about the tree of life before in combination to Gondor, but now we have to talk about the dark tree, the Clifotic tree. And of course, this is the tree we use in the left-hand path. So now I have some explaining to do here, right? Well, when Frodo take on his ring, he ends up in the Clifotic tree, where he sees this Nazgûl's in their shadow form. He ends up in a shadow world. He ends up in in Set's tunnels. Every tunnel that connects the Cliffa is Set's tunnels. And from there, you can't be passive. You are supposed to work with these forces and transform yourself. If you are passive to these forces, well, yeah, you will be corrupt because it's not for all. If you go in there, you need to have a method. You need a map how to work with the forces to transform you, to overcome them. If you are passive and go back and forth to the Clifotic tree, it's not what I recommend at all. Now, did Tolkien know about this? Probably not, but I think he saw the dark tree, the Clifotic tree, as something negative altogether. The ring corrupts its user. The easiest victim is the human race. This becomes important in the fourth age, the age of man. Now we'll talk about it later on. But this is the reason why Gandalf chose a hobbit, because the hobbit is more resilient compared to the human race, and he hoped that Frodo will push through. And Frodo used the ring many times on his journey, or at least a couple of times, and he becomes more and more, comes closer and closer to the Dark Lord or the Clifotic tree or whatever you want to, how you want to see it. The ring is an esoteric method. It is also technology. This leads to my archetype, the tower. And the tower, I talked about the tower in part two. And this is where I agree with Tolkien here, because I don't think it's a good combination to combine technology with method, esoteric method. You don't need technology to transform. You don't need technology to communicate with the gods. You don't need technology to heal yourself. You can heal yourself through plants, through Hecate yourself. You can heal your trauma with Lilith. You can do a lot of things, much more than you can imagine. But when you add technology to it, it becomes a dangerous game. And we can see an esoteric elite, as I call them, use technology in combination with esoteric method. The ring as a symbol for power. Now we come back to the Tolkien tape. I started with the tape. And I will do some quotes from that again, just to remind you. The ring as a symbol for power. The ring, a symbol for technology, future technology, corruption and confusion, power to change the natural into an artificial construct. All of that, Alex and John and talked about all of that, and Tolkien, of course. And of course, we have the tower itself. And in Sumeria, Babylon, it was called Etemen Anki, Kadingir Raki, Ziggurat of Babylon, because it is a ziggurat. And the Sigurd was seven-stepped. It had seven steps. But it was much more than a temple, as an esoteric temple. It was also a banking system involved with the Sigurd, where you had the priest class who created the gold coins. So this was also a banking system. And when you start to combine all of this esoteric lore, technology, money, well, then you end up in the tower and the esoteric elite ruling the day today. Babylon's banksters, as Joseph P. Farrell called them, yeah. And I completely agree. So, quote for myself here, when the tower comes, the boatman follows, or when the boatman comes, the tower follows. So the boatman haven't come yet into this saga, but he will very soon. So you have all of this in the saga. And I think how you can understand it is that Tolkien, of course, didn't know what I knew, what I know, but he read a lot of mythology and he was into the Bible and all of that. And maybe the boatman archetype came from Noah's story of Noah, the tower come from the story of the Tower of Babylon and so on. But when he, this is the interesting thing, when he put all this myth together and created this saga of his, he come to exactly the same, almost exactly the same conclusion I have from a different point, from a different angle. And I'm not saying that Tolkien is a left-hand path practitioner, but I say that if you do a lot of research and decode myth and understand myth and language, you will come to similar conclusion and you want to talk about it. At least Tolkien wanted to do it. And then we come to some very interesting synchronicities between me and Tolkien.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten. And the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.